B-Pod Studios.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Kevin and Newton, as we were just talking about Andy Dalton, would you want to see him in a Patriots uniform next year?
Kevin. Yeah, I think it'd be great. You hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be great. I just have a problem with you calling him Ginger. I have a son who's a good-looking kid. He's red hair, and from time to time through his, schooling and everything, he's been called Ginger and bullied, and I just don't think it's a great thing to do, and it's just perpetuating it. And, you know, if people hear this, they think it's okay. And I just don't have a problem. If he had dark hair and dark skin, you know, you'd be called something else. I mean, I just think it's a bad thing to even, you know, bring up.
All right. Well, so that, fair enough. I'm sorry about your son is getting bullied. Just trying to keep it light here and have a good time. Sometimes it's the expense of others.
Well, I mean, in fairness, I mean, the guy, you know, Andy Dalton's nickname is the Red Rifle.
Yeah.
Which I think is a legit nickname. That's going to turn your mood. I can tell.
Everyone's... it was like the, what was the joke? A little dark joke I made the other day when this news actually broke that he was cut. I knew we were going to talk about it ad nauseum on Felger and Maz that Andy Dalton could be a Patriot. And I said I would root for COVID to make sure that we didn't end up having a season. You know, like that, that way there, it prevents anything from actually happening.
Yeah, there's no season, football, no Andy nothing. Dalton.
Now, I said it in jest. How do you think that went over?
I'm going to guess very poorly on social media. I'm guessing many people took that literally.
It wasn't so much the social media. I think people got it there, Chris. It was the emails. I've actually deleted most of them now. No. There was a deluge of angry emails there, which I'm also sure.
Well, now you know what it's like to be a columnist, Jim.
Yeah, I don't know how the hell you dealt with that. Right now, you know what? It's funny you say that.
What?
You know, it's funny because I used to see some of the comment section, like just the comment section alone of some of your columns.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I can't imagine
it's rough,
what it was
it's
like
rough
in terms
in there.
Of your emails because people were actually able to get you. Yeah. I don't know if think people can get to you now because two people have actually reached out this week. What's Gasper's new work email? And I don't know it, and I didn't supply it. And I'm not going to give them your personal email.
Yeah.
Like, F off. And I was like, oh, Chris is like hidden now. The people can't get to him. Oh, what a world.
It's temporary. Eventually, I think they're going to start putting the work email at the bottom of the column, which is always what happened at the Globe and what happens at the Globe stories now. You know, every writer's email is at the bottom of the column. I will say now because I'm out of it, I can just say I do think more and more in the media industry, particularly in newspapers, like because they want people to click, they use the actual journalist as like human shields. It's like, oh, yeah, these people want to trash you. Yeah, here's a comment section, and let's put your email at the bottom of every story because, you know, it makes it feel like, you know, people are closer to you. And the people that are supporting that are always the people that don't get any of those emails.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Hanging you out to dry.
Yeah, I mean, there's not like, you know, obviously some of the upper management folks can get emails. Their emails, I know, at the Globe, you can find their emails on the website, but it's not quite the same. And it's not like every email, it's not like every story I ever wrote at the Globe also had, you know, John Henry or Linda Pizzuti Henry's Globe email on it. That's not the way that it worked. It was my email. And so if there was anything that was disliked or there was any issue with the story, it all came to me. But that's the way it is in sort of every outlet across the country.
See, you're the level-headed one. Anyone that's ever listened with any regularity knows that. If you heard the beginning of this show, you certainly know where I'm at mentally. The issue is, when I get some of these emails and they'll shame on you, you shouldn't have your job, you should, but do you know how hard it is for me not to write back, Chris?
Like, I know. I've been there. I can't tell you how many times, like, I'm sitting on the couch with my wife and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just responding to a reader. And she's like, oh. She's like, yeah. Okay, let me pause the show. This is going to take 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, the deep breath, give it 2 minutes thing is something I've tried to practice a little bit more here in the last decade or so. I don't really always succeed because I will say I did write back on some of those emails.
Of course you did. Yeah, I've been there. I've been there, man.
I get it. And I know the numbers. And I know people are dying and it's a horrible thing. But you really think I'm rooting for the virus?
No.
Like, I despise Andy Dalton. I retch at the thought of him being in a Patriots uniform.
And it's because you think he's not a good quarterback, not because of the color of his hair.
Yeah, and it's not because he has red hair. Hey, oh, round up the gingers. Hey, what do you think I am here? Jesus, people, lighten up. I get it. I'm freaking out. I'm angry. Everyone's ready. It's like a match. Everyone's just like a match in a dry room right now. I get it. But lighten up. Jesus. Oh, my God. Sorry your son gets bullied. That sucks. You know what? Here, this will lighten.
Lighten the mood, Jim.
It's a story that I know that both of us actually care about, because when I saw it breaking, I immediately tweeted you.
I got a lot of messages.
Texted you, rather. Yeah. So
people were messaging me and congratulating me like it was my birthday or I got a new job when this happened.
Jay Cutler and Kristen Cavallari are done. And this is my favorite part of the story, is this thing devolved, because when this story broke just less than a week ago, Chris, between the former star of The Hills and the former Bears quarterback. And what's the stupid show that they were on?
Very Cavallari.
Very Cavallari. Is that still running? Is this now over now that these two are going to get divorced?
They finished airing the last season. I don't know if they were filming during this or not, but the last season has finished airing.
Well, if you ever watched any of that, and I didn't watch it as intently as you did. I mean, you were a P1 for that. But
yes, I am.
Jay Cutler berated, I feel like, any episode I ever watched by his then wife, like constantly, just like, oh, Jay's lazy. Jay does nothing. Rant, 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 rant. My favorite part of this story, though, since this thing broke, is first it was, oh, it's amicable, they're just going their separate ways. And then you hear, oh, nope, there might have been something going on in terms of cheating with Jay Cutler. And now here's my favorite part. Kristen Cavallari wants Jay Cutler to give her $5 million so she can buy a mansion. Cutler freezes his accounts so she can't access them and tells her to get a job. good for him.
But see, I don't understand. I told her she has a job. She has that company, Uncommon James.
If you actually believe that. See, now I know whose side you're on.
Oh, I'm Team Kristen all
the way. Team Kristen all the way.
Yeah.
Still, like, watching old episodes of The Hills just to watch Kristen Cavallari get out of the pool. I know what you're all about here, Chris. If you think that that's anything more than a vanity project and she makes money outside of her friends, like, you're crazy. That's not a real job. It's not a real business.
Well, there's a real store in Nashville, and she opened one in Chicago.
Yeah, there's real stores from Trophy Wives in Melrose and cities all over, Brooklyn.
There was when I was in L.A., there was a pop-up at the Grove. I think the company's doing well. I'm waiting for the company to go public, Jim.
She probably makes $30 a year. Well, then again, it's very expensive jewelry for other Trophy Wives, so $3,000 a year. But no, that's not a real business.
Well, she started the company with also has her own money. I mean, she gets paid to do e-appearances. She's been on reality shows. She gets paid for appearances. She should have her own money, and I think she used her own money to start this company, not Jay's.
So they have three kids.
They do. Which is sad. That's the sad part.
What a hell this sounds like. Right. So they have multiple here's the thing. They have multiple homes. So reading this story from blacksportsonline.com, according to court documents obtained, Cavallari says that being around Cutler right now in the house is too much for her. Oh, and she wants Cutler to release the couple's funds to let her move into a nearby mansion in Tennessee. Now, he rejected this because the couple has already owned several properties that Cavallari could live in. Go to another one. They have a seven-bedroom mansion in Nashville and also another one in Franklin, Tennessee. Just go to one of these other ones. And here's how I know, not just because, I'm coming off here as, like, the misogynist. People are probably mad about this, too. Like, oh, how dare you? She's entitled to that. Rubble, rubble, rubble. Kami, have you watched the show? She sounds like a giant pain in the ass. And here's how I know I'm right about this, too.
I don't know. I think she sounds delightful.
Here's how I know I'm right, Chris. So my wife, Jasmine, listens intently to the Bobby Bones Show, which is, I think it's a big deal.
It's nationally syndicated.
Yeah, he's a huge
country
deal.
Radio. Yeah.
It's not my cup of tea in terms of listening, but I find him fascinating because he's like one of the great radio. He's like the last great radio success story. I actually read his book. I kind of got into him osmosis through the wife. I don't listen to the show much, but I read his book and I find his story fascinating because he's really come from nothing. And now he's like the biggest name in radio. The guy's syndicated all over the country. He's on Dancing with the Stars. He was at the NFL draft last year doing like hosting duties for ABC. So he's like made this mountain of money and he's now a thing. Well, the other day she tells me like in his show, his radio show, it's like, it's basically it's country top 40. So it's a lot of like the good in this. And, it's not a negative crazy person who's about to snap like I am. So that I can't relate to.
The good in this before he plays Sam Hunt.
Right. Yeah. So it's all like, that type of thing. But in talking about this the other day, I guess he made some like snide comment like, because he lives in Nashville. They live in Nashville and he's, a celebrity like they are. And he's like, we've seen Jay and Kristen out and all I'll say is good for Jay.
Ooh,
and
really?
I was like, oh, wow. Like that to me was like,
man,
oh, that's so telling.
Shot.
This is a guy that, again, is as clean can be, doesn't take shots. isn't really known for being controversial, and for him to say that, I was like, oh, I'm justified. She's the pain in the ass. Go Jay. And the guy got chased around for most of his life by 300-pound linemen to have to give her $5 million so they can she can have her own separate mansion. Oh, screw.
I think she deserves the mansion.
Of course you do.
Yeah, I do.
Good for Jay Cutler.
I mean, she supported his career all those years, and now he can't just give her the mansion to raise their children?
Poor guy gets berated on
he
that
show.
He
sounds selfish. I'll tell you what.
Team Kristen Chris.
In all seriousness, though, I mean, obviously I'm Team Kristen, but in all seriousness, just like Bobby Bones said, oh, good for Jay, go talk to anybody who ever covered Jay Cutler in Denver or in Chicago and ask them, and they'll tell you good for Kristen.
Yeah.
One of the all-time just pain-in-the-ass players and, you know, sarcastic and surly and sullen. I mean, I still remember him doing an interview one year at the Super Bowl. He had to do an interview with, like, the Broncos beat writers. And you could just, his whole body language, you know, the angry spread we talked about last week? It was the angry spread, and the whole body language was like, oh, I don't want to be here. I don't want to touch you guys. Like, ugh. Like, he was just, you know, I don't know what he's like now, but in his younger days, he was a real pain in the butt.
It just further solidifies my overall thinking with professional athletes. Unless you're hyper-religious and, like, a super Christian dude who, like, truly, like a Tim Tebow type, right?
Yeah.
Why would you ever get married? Like, it always ends the same, right? Doesn't all these stories always devolve into they got bored, or she, you know, like one of them ended up getting like hooked on drugs, or there was cheating going on, and like then they end up, you know, borderline penniless, and you're giving $5 million to a third mansion just to shut her the hell up, or something like that. It always ends up the same, time after time after time. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, okay, you fell in love, you fell out of love, but now you have three kids and their lives are going to get affected here. This is just in the Cutler situation. Yeah. It's like these stories are, they're rote at this point.
Well, you know what's interesting about it, and you mentioned rote, what's interesting is the timing of it in terms of it's after he's retired and he hasn't picked up anything else. And if anyone who watches the show would know, that was like a major source of frustration. But I think a lot of times with these professional athletes in their marriages, it's all of a sudden the career ends. They're not on the road all the time. And the two people really have to spend time together. And they're like, ugh, I don't really like you.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of it, too. Like, I think the two of them just being together all the time and then his just complete lack of motivation or ambition post-career, I think was definitely an issue. And that's why Kristen's right.
Jay. I am Team Jay all
Jay
the
is
way.
Jay is the problem.
Guy getting sacked all over the place. I know he was a pain in the ass, too. He has the nickname Smoking Jay for a reason, but $5 million because you want your own separate mansion. Go to the other house. You have multiple houses, you pain in the ass.
Well, those houses have bad memories for her. She needs a fresh start, Jim.
All right, we have Brian Robb alongside producing this show today. And he wrote a great column about Rick Pitino's time with the Celtics. Let's crap on that 25 years later. Next, here on Gasper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Many of us
Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door. And if you expect them to walk through the door, they're going to be gray and old. What we are is young, exciting, hardworking, and going to improve. People don't realize that. And as soon as they realize that those three guys are not coming through that door, the better this town will be for all of us. Because they're young guys in that room playing their ass off. I wish we had $90 million under the salary cap. Wish we could buy the world. We can't. The only way we can do is work hard.
Ah, yes, one of the legendary audio clips in Boston sports history. What is it, 25, 26 years old now? 25 years old? Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports. But the reason we play it is to guide you to Brian Robb's piece in Boston Sports Journal, looking back at Rick Pitino when he first took control of the Boston Celtics. Obviously, there's not, you know, real sports going on right now. So B-Rob did a deep dive on Pitino, and it's worth looking back at what a disaster this whole thing was. And remember, too, like, so it's worth talking about because I just, for me, because that's one of the teams and eras in Boston sports that I truly, like, despise. There's teams that will always stick out to me that I eventually started to, teams that I rooted for that I ended that grew up rooting for, I ended up at one point in my life rooting against. And that era of the Celtics, that turns so quick. Like, you're feeling so good that first game against the Jordan Bulls. They're coming off the championship. It's like, oh my God, they beat Jordan and the Bulls. The sky is the limit here. The arrow's pointed up. It's a new era of Celtics basketball. Patino's going to change everything. And then almost like that, it just went to complete hell. That era of Celtics basketball, I hated that team. Like how I hated the 2012 Red Sox. How I hated, it didn't take long, but a couple of months in, I really started to despise that 09 Patriots team. Hell, even last year's Patriots team, after a couple of months, I'm like, what am I watching here? Hollow 12-4 record, like, ugh, this is gross. But that Patino Celtics era, oh, just hideous. So for those, and don't give the whole thing away, B-Rug, because people should read the piece at bostonsportsjournal.com, but some of the takeaways you had, because you're going to do, this was just the first era, starting with the summer of 96, and when he first got here, and that first disastrous free agency. What were some of the takeaways?
There's a lot to go through, Jim. It's one of those things. So I actually went into it because of the Last Dance documentary, because it was that they didn't show it in the documentary that first night. Like you said,
they should have.
Exactly. That's a big night for Patino and the whole, city of Boston at that point. And the Celtics, like you said, beat the Jordan and the Bulls that night. So I kind of went down a rabbit hole being like, oh, I was a teenager growing up in this era, so I didn't remember the particulars. And I couldn't look away because the rabbit hole kept getting deeper and deeper in terms of how bad that first year was. And the thing that I can't get over the most in this piece was the fact that Patino signed Chris Mills to a 7-year contract, his biggest free agent signing that first offseason, and traded him away before the season even started. Like, literally 2 months later, traded him at the end of training camp for Walter McCarty and a bunch of stiffs that were never in the league again.
Right.
So it's like he cleared out David Wesley, Rick Fox, a bunch of really good players on the Celtics roster, so we could bring in this guy, and then was literally gave him away for nothing 2 months later. So it's like, I don't know how, you guys real. I mean, Chris, were you, was this all vivid to you at a time in real time that, how bad this was that he was doing?
In real time, no, it wasn't. I mean, obviously, look, he took the job. He thought he was going to get Tim Duncan. That's not the way it worked out. It was Ron Mercer, Chauncey Billups. I remember, being frustrated he didn't ride more with Chauncey Billups. Now, what year was it that the one that really stood out to me, and when I knew we were doomed, what year was it that he brought in Travis Knight? Because that guy was a
stiff. Yeah, that was year one. Yep.
That was year one. Okay. That was the move that stood out to me where I was like, oh, this isn't good because this guy can't play. And he gave him, what was that contract?
7 years, $20 million.
Yeah. That's offensive.
Oh, God. That guy was
4 points per game at the time.
That guy was such a stiff. And I just remember thinking, what is he doing? The other thing that stands out to me about Patino, and this has nothing to do with the entire era, but I always remember that coronation they had where they put him up there and they lowered all the banners down and what a big deal that was and just how smug and confident he was about rebuilding the franchise. Ugh, what a disaster.
It really is. It's one of the great stains on this franchise's history. And it started off with, again, such promise.
I was so excited when they got him. I really was. I was like, this is great. He's going to turn it around. But he didn't know what he was doing as a GM. I mean, that was ultimately his undoing.
But, you should read this. But the great summary that you wrote here, B-Rob, is Patino dumped 4 of the Celtics' 5 top scorers and managed to tie up all the team's salary cap space for the foreseeable future in order to land Chris Mills, this was Travis Knight, Andrew DeClercq, and a couple of second-round picks. Incredibly, this offseason probably is not the strongest candidate for the worst decision of the Patino era. So you're going to go further into this looking at 96-97, right?
Yeah, so we know, Chauncey Billups gets traded, obviously, at the trade deadline in February, so we'll look at that. And then more picks as we go along, trading away a top 10 pick for Vitaly Potapenko a couple years later.
Keeps
getting worse. It literally, you're like, oh, wow, he did this? Like, oh, man. Like, it can't get worse, but it does. And it's a very dark road, but we're going to be going down it in the next couple weeks.
And I feel like it's been, at least from this first one, and as you're going to put up the following columns, it's been guys, because you were a teenager, but it's guys my age, 40s, maybe a little bit older, that look at this, and it's like, I can't look away. It's horrible, but you want to read it, and you realize, 20-some-odd years later, you're like, oh, God, this really was awful, maybe even worse than I thought. So has the feedback been pretty good, though?
Yeah, no, people have, it's, like I said, it's like kind of cruel punishment, but it's also, a time where it's like, wow, you look at where the Celtics are at now compared to what it was 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and just the regimes and, people who just kind of know what they're doing, i.e. Danny Ainge and company. Because Patino did not, and we heard in this rant, he's still he's blaming everyone in that rant. That was 4 years into his tenure where he's oh, I wish we could be $1 million under the salary cap. You're like, you know why you're not? Because you gave out $20 million to Travis Knight in the first year of your reign. So it's been a fun walk down memory lane.
The other thing, too, and you know, I'm going to read the story, B-Rob. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But the other thing about it, too, was the way he sort of pushed out, you know, Red Auerbach, which was actually, right. You know, disgraceful.
Right.
And what happened. And, look, there are different stories on that. You hear some stuff that maybe Patino was sort of warned about the idea of, you know, you have to make sure that Red doesn't still have his influence, and maybe that influenced Patino's decision. But just the way they took the president title away from Red, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. And so that was a big thing with Patino. And so it's just the whole era was really a disaster. And it started off with such great promise. And it was one of those things where I think he just, even though he had coached in the NBA before and been successful with the Knicks, he was used to sort of the college level where he always had the best players. And if you didn't like what you had around you, you could just swap it out, you know, get new recruits. You're good. You could swap out the whole team, right? And you can't do that in the NBA. The decisions that you make, you're stuck with them, and the repercussions from them last for a while. And he is the prime example of that.
Well, as much as I despise the man now, and I hated that era for years, as that ended, he was out late 90s, early 2000s. I defended Rick Pitino, and it's just further proof of how easily I can be bought. I will explain, along with, I want to get your guys' thoughts on The Last Dance, if you've actually been enjoying that, which seemingly the rest of Twitter in the world is, because I have some thoughts on that too, especially from these last couple episodes that they aired last Sunday. So all that coming up next here.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. All right, so prior segment, we were talking about Brian Robb's piece that you should read in Boston Sports Journal, looking back at the hideous Rick Pitino era as he took over the Celtics starting the summer of 1996. And it's really even darker to look back and realize how poorly handled that whole situation was once that idiot took over. But as I mentioned, as we wrapped up that prior segment, for years, even after he decimated the Celtics and turned them into one of the laughingstocks of the NBA, franchise I grew up rooting for, watching them win championship after championship as a young chubby child with my USS flag that Chris was jealous of. For years, Chris, after he left, I defended the man. And it's just further proof of how I can easily be bought, let me tell you. Now, since then, I've grown up a little bit and I've learned to despise him rightfully again. But I think it was his last year he was here. At Fenway Park, I got tickets from my dad, third base side. He had these great seats he would occasionally get from work. And I went with three of my friends. It was four tickets. Third base side, four or five rows up. And after a few innings, I kept seeing this guy who was there with three of his kids just getting bothered. People coming up half inning after a few half innings. It's like, hey, hello, can I get a photograph? Can I get an autograph? And I realized, I was like, oh, it's Rick Pitino. And he just was getting bothered and bothered and bothered and bothered by all the pains in the asses sitting in that section. I got to get a photo with Pitino kid. So my buddy Brian went up to him because I said, I was like, this poor bastard. I'm like, he can't even get out of his seat. Ask him if, I don't know why. I just felt like being magnanimous. I'm like, ask him if he wants a beer or something. My buddy Brian goes over and he's like, hey, Rick, we're going to go up. He's like, no photo or nothing. He's like, do you want a beer? And he looked at him and went, yeah, I would love one, actually. And he goes, how many are you with your friends? And Brian, and he turns around and he points to me and my three other buddies. Rick Pitino proceeds to take out a knot of hundreds. That was, I'm making the motion to Chris, but it was about as thick as a grapefruit. I remember being now two or three rows away or whatever it was, and being like, oh, my God, look at the, it was a... It was a knot. It was FU type of money.
Yeah. That's what Felger pulls out.
Pulls that out of the seat of his pants. Peels off a few hundreds, Chris, and says, get beers for your boys, too. And we were like, holy crap. For years, I defended Rick Pitino because of that, because he bought us beers. So we all had to go up, and we had to sacrifice a little bit so some of us couldn't get two each. It was the least we could do. Make sure he could get one and get some more, we had to get, candy and crap for his kids. But the poor guy couldn't get, he couldn't get the hell out of his seat, and neither could his kids, because all these people kept coming up for autographs and photographs. And we went and got him beers, and I was like, oh, Rick Pitino, even though he just gutted the Celtics and did a terrible job, he's all right in my book. He bought me beers. Now, I've since come off that, but it just goes to show you, boy, I am a quick sellout.
Yeah, you can definitely be bought.
Yeah.
You can definitely be bought. But that's the way, let's be honest, but that's kind of the way it goes in the, you weren't in the media at the time, but if someone treats you pretty well, then you're like, oh, that guy's a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, even if maybe they're not a nice guy. You know, I think that's sort of the way it goes in life. But that's – so here's my question on that. Did you guys give him the change, or was it just implied you could, like, keep
– No, yeah, it was because my buddy Brian tried to give it back, and he was like, no. It was, like, $40 after – because, again, he had I think it was two or three kids. We had to buy them a bunch of junk. It's not like we were looking for the money, but, no, he just said keep the change, too. So it was great.
I wonder if one of those kids was his son, Richard Pitino, who now is the head coach at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. You bought candy for Richard Pitino.
So what did Stephen Gostkowski get for you that you protected him all these years?
Hey, no, Stephen is a genuinely nice guy, and he's had a borderline Hall of Fame career.
So, and Brian was quick to mention, I think he's right. Like, it's funny, with the Last Dance documentary, which I've loved, I was really surprised that they didn't touch on that loss, because that was like, I think the question started that early, that first game of the season where the Bulls lose to the Pitino Celtics, and that was a rough goal for them. And they touch on that, but not that specific game. But overall, have you both enjoyed this?
I'm going to be totally honest with you. I have not watched an episode.
You're kidding?
No.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to go
do
back.
Do you just not care, or is it?
It's, you know me sometimes. I can be like a little contrarian, and I'm like, oh, God, all these people are watching this and tweeting about it. I'll do this on my own time.
I gotcha.
I don't want to be part of the experience of it. I just want to enjoy it on my own time. You know, and I do have fond memories of that era of basketball. I've seen clips and stuff on ESPN, like, and I've, you know, you go on ESPN.com, they have eclipse, and I've willfully watched them because I'm like, oh, I want to see this dunk, like when he dunks on Ewing and stuff like that, but I just, everybody sort of makes it appointment viewing. The other thing is I've been working Sunday night. So between those two things, I'm like, I'll get to this on my own time.
And I will say, at least on the Verizon end of things, like, they don't put it up within 24 hours on demand. Like, it's a pain in the ass to find.
Really?
So typically.
What about ESPN Plus?
You got to watch it on your phone. So, you know, like, you know, my wife and I have watched usually the first episode. She goes to bed, and then the next day, I'm like, because she's been the one to tell me. She's like, I have to watch it on my stupid phone and log into ESPN Plus, and you can't, like, you know, send the signal to the TV. So.
Oh, really? You can't mirror?
Not the way that we have it set up.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
Why is it not? ESPN Plus is like an app. Why can't you just watch it on like the Apple TV ESPN Plus?
You'd think. I don't know.
Oh, God. I was like 100% banking on that.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to have to go back and start DVRing all these episodes.
It might be on Netflix too, like after like a few 24 hours later.
Oh, really?
I think so.
She looked there and she hasn't been able to find it. Maybe that's changed, but after those first few, they weren't up like after the first day or so.
Oh, geez. I thought I could just watch this anytime I wanted.
By the time you get to it, after you're watching all your stories and things on Bravo, you'll find it. You'll be able to get it. But B-Rob, have you liked it as like the resident hoophead?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, I think I'd like anything at this point, to be honest. So like my standards are low, but it has been just a fun look back, again, from being familiar with that era, but not remembering the particulars of just, like, the Kraus stuff to me, like, really sticks out of, like, I had no idea how much, like, the vendetta went back there. And then, like, the Dennis Rodman stuff, like, throughout that era and what that would look like. And if that happened in this day and age, if a guy disappeared for two nights to go to Vegas in the middle of season. So that stuff like that has been fun for me. But I do think, like, hopefully that – I keep hearing the best is yet to come in it, and I hope that's the case.
So how far into it are they? How many episodes?
There's four episodes. It's 10 total. It does feel a bit much at times. I don't know if we needed, like, such a deep dive on Phil Jackson. There was one of these last two episodes that was like, all right, like, we don't have to go on the whole backstory of Phil Jackson. And even when they started, I'm like, well, let's get to the point where he takes acid. I can see that coming. Oh, sure enough, yeah, he took acid at one point. It does feel a little gratuitous at times, but overall, I liked it. I enjoyed those teams. I thought Jordan was fascinating to watch. I know the competition wasn't all that great at times during that run, but I also think that's a testament to how great they were collectively. I find him fascinating, Jordan, and I think he's one of the, you know, he's one of the best athletes I've ever had the pleasure of watching. I hate that I never got to see him in his prime live. I saw him when he was fat and washed up with the Wizards.
Oh no, I got to see him. I saw a game. I wish I could remember what year it was. I was young. I want to say it was 88 or 89 at the Garden against the Celtics, and I saw him, and it was nationally televised on CBS. In fact, like the start of the game got like delayed because of like a Georgetown Syracuse game that they were showing. Yeah, I saw him like, I saw him in his prime live at the Garden. That that was pretty cool. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, a buddy of mine went to the 63 point game against
the
Celtics.
Really? In the playoffs,
the most impressive performance in a sporting event at a sporting event he's ever watched in his entire life. You know, and think of how good that that 86 Celtics team was.
I mean, single handedly. I always think with Jordan, and I always think this way with Jordan. I feel lucky to have been alive when he played to be able to witness his career. I feel like it's like being alive when Babe Ruth played baseball.
Right. Oh, no. And I think there's people – the reason I like this thing, even if it at times does feel a bit gratuitous, is it's – I think it's important for people that are, like, under our age group, like 35 and under, that still want to be, like, anointing LeBron right now as the greatest ever.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
You don't get it.
No, you don't get it.
If you didn't live that and watch it while it was happening, you just don't get it. You don't get it. And I'm not as hard on LeBron as other guys, but you watch this thing, especially of what – you know, street fights that some of these series were, especially those first two that they lost, those Eastern Conference Finals to the Pistons, I don't think LeBron would have been able to hack it. He had the body type for it, but I don't know if he had the mentality for it.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, that sort of killer instinct factor. And the other thing with Jordan that you can't find it, you're not going to find it on any highlight reel, and you're not going to find it by going on Basketball Reference. It was just during his career, when you watch those games, you just felt like with his teams, particularly in the 90s when they really started to take off and won the six championships, the Bulls are going to win because they have Michael Jordan. It was just that simple.
Yeah.
Like Michael Jordan, you always felt like Michael Jordan's not going to lose. He's not going to lose this playoff series. The Bulls are going to pull through and win this because they have Michael Jordan. And it's hard to quantify and define that feeling unless you were around for it and you lived it. But to me, that's always the greatest compliment you can pay an athlete. And I think you'd say the same for a lot of years about Tom Brady. The Patriots are going to win this game because they have Tom Brady. That is the ultimate sign of greatness of an athlete.
And he was also, and it's the other thing I was reminded of, I think he, and for at least my lifetime and our lifetimes, Chris, I think he might be the coolest person that lived during our lifetime. Not just because he was able to, you know, he backed up, he was able to have that kind of swagger, but just the aesthetics, the brand, all of it that came with
it. The pop culture significance.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to think, at least in history, before my lifetime, like, you know, a young Mick Jagger, young David Bowie.
Elvis.
Like, Elvis, like, a young Jimi Hendrix. Well, Jimi Hendrix died young, but, like, you know, like, and you think of, like, the coolest human beings who've ever lived.
Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, right. Like, Jordan's one of them, at least in our lifetime. I think it's Jordan. Who else could there be?
Yeah. Again, that doesn't mean he's, like, you know, a paragon of humanity. As a person, but... No, but you're right. I mean, when you talk about, I mean, he so totally transcended his sport and was, I mean, when I think about, like, who are some of the icons growing up, I think, like, Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think it's right. Michael Jackson, too. Although he does have a real sordid history there, too. But at that time, I mean, there was a period there, especially early 80s. Michael Jackson, yeah, coolest person that lived. That's about it. I can't really think of anyone else. Oh, right. Prince.
Prince is cool, man.
Prince
was cool.
Prince absolutely gets in there. And he fell off, but there was a period of time. Prince, definitely one of the coolest people on the planet.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you got to factor it. Here's how I always factor it when it comes to, like, the cool thing. And it's the look. It's the aesthetic. Jordan had that during his prime, especially young. Like, when he first came into the league and he had the gold chain, too, like, and he's just all sinewy. It's like, and this is what it comes down to, like, the cool factor. Ladies love him. Guys want to be him. That's what, you know, guys, and you could probably, after a few beers, even convince a guy into be like, eh, do him too. Like, why not? Because he's so cool. And like, yeah, like a young Jordan, I could be talked into. Like, I get it. Like, I can understand why everyone wants to do him. So that's how I always factor, like, that cool fan. And so who else? I think that's it.
I mean, Tom Brady.
That's a provincial thing.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think he's bigger than we realize, but he's not.
But is
Jordan.
Tom Brady cool? Tom Brady's not cool, especially the more
you just mentioned. You mentioned girls want to, you know, women want to be with him, guys want to be him. Like, I always thought Brady was kind of like the James Bond of quarterbacks.
Yeah, he's so great on the field, but man, especially these last handful of years, the more he talks off the field, it's like, oh, dude, shut up. You are just a weird, weird dude that lives in a bubble.
What about Madonna?
Yep. Yeah. All right. Okay. Especially when the sex book came out in the early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
That thing's worth a lot of money now, too.
Is it really?
Yeah, the original one, especially you have to, they still have like the foil on it, and you never opened it. I think it's worth like a couple of grand.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding. No, that original first print of that sex book by Madonna is worth a fair amount of money. In fact,
wow.
Yammer for a sec. I want to look that
up. Okay. That's really, yeah, I mean, these are all like, you know, 80s, 90s icons that when I think of Michael Jackson, Prince, Madonna, Michael Jordan, I mean, these are the people that you think of that really sort of defined that era. When I think of my childhood, and they just sort of transcended whatever their art form was. And that was the other thing about Michael Jordan, just the way he played, the artistry, it was just incredible. I mean, obviously you had Dr. J and what he was able to do, but it just felt like Jordan took it to another level. Or maybe just at that point, the attention the league was getting was at another level, you know, because when Dr. J was doing his thing coming out of the ABA and then into the NBA, like, you know, the NBA finals was still on tape delay,
right?
It just wasn't the same level of scrutiny.
So I was wrong. It's a buyer's market for the sealed Madonna sex book with exclusive CD, explicit content. You can get one for around $250.
$225.
I thought it was worth a hell of a lot more. I stand corrected. Oh, okay. See, I'm thinking about the Madonna signed sex book, the Japanese version. Certificate of authenticity, sealed with promo CD. $2,950.
What was the Japanese? Is it like it's in Japanese?
I don't know. Maybe it's
written in Japanese.
Maybe it's filthier. Maybe there's, you know. No holes unbound or something like that. I don't know.
By the way, did you know, this is a quick aside now that we're going down this rabbit hole. Did you know that, and I didn't know this until recently, I stumbled across it on the internet rabbit hole. I didn't know Madonna had a thing with Devante Swing from Jodeci. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
When?
Yeah. It was, look it up. Madonna. I looked the other day. I was like, wait, this happened? There's like a picture of them together. Apparently,
really?
They had like a thing.
There we go. Madonna, Devante Swing had a thing going on.
I used to love Jodeci, you know, Devante Swing,
yeah.
Swing, like that whole deal.
He had beautiful eyes, that guy. Good looking dude. So this was, this is like early 90s. Yeah, yeah, no, that's a young Madonna. Yeah, Madonna goes on that list.
Yeah.
And I know, like, there's some of you, Madonna was never cool. Again, you had to live.
No, you had to live.
You had to be Gen X like Chris and I and have lived through that in the early 90s.
Or Zennial, bridging the two.
Realize just how cool Madonna was. Oh, Tupac?
Yeah, Pac, definitely.
Yeah, him and Biggie, I feel like you're in.
That was, you know, I'll say this about that, too.
Was Biggie really cool, though?
Biggie was cool. I don't know if Biggie was around or alive long enough.
Yes, yeah, so it was a brief reign for him, and then obviously, like...
But the thing about... That's the other thing. I consider myself lucky. Like, you just took for granted the whole Tupac-Biggie era of rap. You're like, oh, we'll always be like this. There'll be, like, two, you know, great rappers, and they'll have a rivalry, and it's like, oh, no. That was, like, the golden age, and I was alive for it, and you didn't even realize it at the time to, like, fully... appreciate what that was like.
I'll tell you, though, the other takeaway from watching one of those last episodes of The Last Dance, and this is why I wished you had watched it.
Okay.
A reminder of what a young Carmen Electra looked like. Holy crap. Now, they show her now, and she's still throwing in the mid-80s.
Okay.
But
how old is she now?
I think close to 50.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I start to feel like, I don't know if you've seen this NFL, like, we're all in it together, basically, coronavirus commercial, but they show Deion Sanders and he's not dyeing his beard during the shutdown.
Oh, yeah, no, he looks old.
And it made me very sad because, like, Deion is one of my all-time favorite athletes, and I'm like, I know how old I am, and now I'm seeing how old Deion is, and it's like, oh, my life is coming to an end.
I told you there was names from this year's NFL draft, Chris. That was kind of a tipping point for me. Sean Jefferson's kid.
Yeah, man.
No, I just remembered watching him. It's like, no, that's now 20-some-odd years ago. No,
but how old is Carmen?
She's 48. She's,
oh, good.
And still, but, man, like, late 90s Carmen Electra, whew, that was like Pedro of the same time, painting corners,
when
making
you say,
guys, like, weak at the knees.
When you say Carmen Electra, it's like, for some reason, the two things I think of with Carmen Electra are Playboy and MTV. Like, those are two things that pop in my head.
I saw her, the first year, actually, maybe a first year or two getting a paycheck at the then, now-defunct WFNX, and I had to go get sound. I had to get, you know, do you ever listen from, I think stations still do it, like, hey, this is Kid Rock on 101.7
yes,
FNX.
I
had to get that kind of audio from Kid Rock and Limp Bizkit. It was a dual bill at the Lowell Memorial Auditorium. It was 98 or 99. It was like when those two acts were taken off. And at the time, Carmen Electra was with Fred Durst, the frontman of Limp Bizkit. So I had to be standing around the backstage. I'm like, you know, young, holding my stupid recorder. I'm there with like other, you know, radio hacks waiting to get the audio. And I'm all awkward and like nervous and whatnot. And Joe C, who's passed, Joe C, little guy, who used to be part of Kid Rock's act, came through on a skateboard with two lobsters in his hand, the two live lobsters. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen at that time. Like, now just getting into radio, I'm like, this is the debauchery I'm waiting to see all my life. And it wasn't that bad, but it's a little guy on a skateboard being like, Josie, coming through. And behind him, I remember I gasped. I went, like, it was a young 1999 Carmen Electra. It made you weak in the knees like a Pedro curveball would. Like, it was just, and who knows what went on backstage there with her and Fred as Fred was getting ready for his show. I'd like to think it was something dirty. Who's to even know? But I ended up getting the audio.
So did you get just from him, or did you have to get it from Carmen Electra too?
No, she was somewhere else. But I just got like, hey, this is Fred. It's Limp Bizkit. Okay, all right. I got Kid Rock's audio, like sitting in a men's room. He was like, yeah, just follow me in here. I'm like, all right. And he took a leak. And I waited him. I put the microphone in his face. I'm like, yeah, it's Kid Rock. Rock on. Listen to FNX. Like, oh, cool.
Yeah, wait, did he come out of the men's room, or you did it in the men's room?
We did it in the men's room, Chris.
Did you have to, like, cut out him flushing?
No, he didn't even flush, if I remember. It was just like, it was a stand-up stall. It's not like he dropped a deuce or anything. He just let loose. And I was like, hey, can you just, you know, I hand him the liner sheet, and he looks at it, and it's like, you know, fill in the blank. Hey, it's Kid Rock, and you're listening to FNX. Hey, it's Kid Rock, and you're like, all right.
So let me ask you this. Did he wash his hands after he went to the bathroom?
Yes.
He did?
Yeah.
Then I have a whole new respect for Kid Rock.
Yeah, it was a quick, like, yeah, it was a quick wash and wipe on the pants.
Okay. Recall.
It's 21, 22 years ago now.
That's pretty
yes,
cool.
God saw it. Yeah, it's maybe one of the most striking human beings I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, you've lived quite the life, Jim Murray.
I got a lot of wacky stories.
Yeah, I mean, Rick Pitino, Carmen Electra. This is all good stuff.
All right, I have yammered on too long here. Let us go to break. We'll come back top of the hour, give you the headlines, and we'll get into the final hour of what has been a off-the-rails Gaspar Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.